Cascadian, K Community Access Radio. In Carbondale, Colorado, in the United States, you're listening to The Tactile Traveler, empowering blind and low-vision people to explore the world and helping our sighted friends see the world in a new way. I'm Nick Eisenberg. When blind people go places, we don't experience things like our sighted friends. We don't see beautiful mountains or romantic sunsets. The goal of this program is to create experiences that are more meaningful and just more fun for us and our sighted traveling companions. Frequently, as people lose their eyesight, they become more and more isolated. The Tactile Traveler hopes to empower people not only to go literally around the world, but around the block to new adventures in their lives. Blind ranges from people who are visually impaired, and glasses and contact lenses no longer allow them to lead a normal life, to people like me, who are totally blind, to sighted parents who have a blind child, blind parents who have sighted children, and blind parents with blind children, to people of all ages, interests, and physical abilities. On today's program, the Disabilities Talk and blind nurses. Unfortunately, in the United States, black parents have to have the talk with their teenagers and especially teenage sons. The talk is about how to interact with the police without being arrested or killed. Usually it consists of something like be polite. If you're pulled over by the police, turn on your interior light. Keep your hands on top of the steering wheel and ask for permission before moving your hands for something like reaching into the glove compartment.
I basically indicated to them that what I would basically do is ask the officer, would you like to see my driver's license? And if he says yes, you tell him where your driver's license is. If you have a weapon with you inside the car that you have a permit for, you need to tell the officer where it is and what it is. The dynamic of that is you want to then have the officer know if you're reaching over to the glove compartment, you need to tell him my weapon is in the glove compartment and or I have such and such in the glove compartment. And then the officer knows that if you reach over there, the officer should probably tell you don't go into your glove compartment. That way he knows, you know, that he does not want you to open your glove compartment because then you're placing the officer in danger. And doing that may cause the officer to do something the officer wishes he never did, which is shoot you.
That's Leslie Steffens, who helps with this show, talking about conversations with his now adult sons. The talk isn't just hypothetical. One of his sons, when he was a teenager, was followed by the same police officer every night for blocks as he drove home from work. And Leslie was stopped by the police soon after moving into a white neighborhood.
I have been stopped on Wadsworth, basically had moved into the area. I was loading furniture into the house, finished doing that, and closed the garage door and got back in my car, and I drove over to Wadsworth. And while I was on Wadsworth, an officer drove up behind me and turned their lights on, and I stopped, and he came over. He said, "Could I see your driver's license?" And I said, "Sure." My driver's license at that time was in my left rear pocket. And I said, "My license is in my left rear pocket. Would you want me to get it out for you?" And he said, "Yes." And I reached in and pulled out my license and handed it to him. On my driver's license was the address of my house. And then he said one of the neighbors saw a black family coming out of the house and they called us. "I'm sorry I bothered you. Have a good day." Got back in his car and he drove off.
People of all races with disabilities are also stopped by the police. I haven't found examples of cops killing people with disabilities, but cops stop, hassle, and arrest us for just living our lives.
What's this in your back pocket? I just saw you walking in.
What's the problem? You're a tyrant?
Yeah, I am, actually. What's your name and date of birth?
I don't have to do that.
Yes, sir. I was investigating.
That's the sound of body cam video of police arresting Jim Hodges, a legally blind guy in Lake City, Florida, on October 31st, 2022, walking home from jury duty. Jim sees well enough that in good light, he doesn't need his folding white cane. So he folds it up and sticks it in his back pocket. The woman you hear screaming in the video is a deputy who saw his white cane in his back pocket and thought it was a gun. About 35 seconds into the video, it became clear that his white cane wasn't a gun. It's a white cane. But instead of stopping and wishing him a good day, like the cop who stopped Leslie Steffens did, she asked him for his name and ID. Jim knew under Florida law that if a cop stops a person and it becomes apparent that the person is not committing a crime, or has not committed a crime, or is not about to commit a crime, they have no legal grounds to question him further. Jim Hodges knew this and refused to give her his name or show his ID. In the meantime, a male sergeant shows up, and they ultimately arrest Jim Hodges for resisting arrest for a crime he didn't commit. Both deputies ultimately were suspended without pay and had to face additional discipline, including constitutional rights training. Ellie Carlson teaches orientation and mobility for the Colorado Department of Deafblind, Deaf, and Hard of Hearing. She's been teaching orientation and mobility for 22 years.
My specialty is with deafblind, so folks who have condition of both vision loss and hearing loss combined. And several of them have shared with me experiences of being stopped by the police or even put in jail in a drunk tank to dry out because the officer observed that they were off balance when they were walking, that they had slurred speech or unintelligible speech when they were speaking. And so these are both common behaviors of somebody who has, especially Usher's type 1, where there is vision loss and hearing loss that affects the speech, it affects balance.
Things can go very wrong when police stop someone and don't realize that they can't understand orders.
That has happened. Yeah, that has happened. Or the police will say, put your hands up, and the person who is deaf or hard of hearing doesn't understand that, doesn't hear that, and then they're taken down.
There have been situations where police misunderstand sign language for gang signs or resisting arrest. Lorraine Hutchinson recently retired from teaching travel skills to blind folks in New Zealand and Colorado. She worked with a lot of people with additional problem to being blind, like a man in a small town in southern Colorado.
He had Huntington's chorea, also known as St. Vitus dance. It's a neurological disorder. The body has uncontrollable movements, and you can stagger or even fall over. And eventually, you find it very difficult to swallow and eat. He was blind and, well, low vision, and I was working with him. And he would go into town, but sometimes his speech would be affected too by the Huntington's, and he would stagger a little bit. And many times people would call the police just assuming that he was drunk, and it was not that at all. And it was embarrassing for him, and it happened with such regularity that he really didn't go into town much, and it made him very angry, and he got tired of trying to explain because he felt that he was not being believed.
In another case, she had a situation where the police weren't the problem. It was other people who meant well.
A guy who went to the Colorado Center for the Blind I worked with, he lived in southern Colorado here, was really He was put in a nursing home. He was a young man. Really, people didn't know what to do to help him. And I got involved, and he got sent there and was getting a lot of independent skills, one of which was orientation and mobility. And then when he went to his home area, he was good. He was out using his cane, and it's a small town where he lives. And sometimes he did not always cross at the light. There's just one light in the town. So he jaywalked, but people assumed, motorists, that he was in need of help. And instead of maybe asking and pulling over, they called the police. So the police were constantly saying, "What are you doing out here walking?" And he said, "Well, I'm doing just that. I'm walking home. Do you need help?" And he said, "No, I'm fine." I think that happens often. There's this assumption, if you can't see and you're out walking around with the cane, that you need help, and gosh, I guess we should call the police.
A lot of blind people have diabetes or are blind as a result of diabetes. Lee Carlson.
Somebody having a diabetic reaction, blindness is oftentimes connected to diabetes, and somebody who's having a sugar crash may also be experiencing dizziness, an off-balance gait, and slurred speech. So similar situation. I actually had a college roommate who was diabetic and was several times taken into drunk tanks to dry out when what they needed was medication or food to offset this diabetic reaction.
It happens. We may be stopped by the police when we're not doing anything wrong. That's where the talk can prepare us to de-escalate the situation. In this case, the disability talk. And if you're a minority, both talks. Since many of us become blind or develop a disability after childhood, it could be with a social worker or therapist. And instead of a talk, it could be a plan we create with family or friends.
I suggest that folks identify themselves somehow on their person. There are people who choose to wear a medical ID bracelet or necklace. There are some people who carry a communication card, like a laminated index card or an ID, like business card style. It will say in bold print clearly, "I am deaf and blind. Please call my emergency contact," or "I am diabetic. Please call my emergency contact." So something that when encountering law enforcement, you can communicate clearly, even if there's a language barrier or a medical situation occurring, that law enforcement can recognize that this is not a intoxication situation, that you are not a threat. Sometimes somebody who's communicating in American Sign Language. The deaf culture is very expressive in their facial expressions. They're very expressive in their visual language of using hand gestures and sign. There have been times when law enforcement misinterprets that as somebody who is upset, angry, even violent, and they have cuffed them and taken them in. So it's an attempt of communication by carrying a communication card, a printed in English or English, Spanish, bilingual, whatever system they need, that just explains their disability situation, their medical situation, clearly to avoid that confusion.
Joe Beaver, Jamie Lewis, and Emily Schumann helped with this story. You're listening to The Tactile Traveler, empowering blind and low-vision people to explore the world and helping our sighted friends see the world in a new way. I'm Nick Eisenberg. Becoming a nurse is the dream of many women and to a smaller number men. Low vision doesn't have to stop you from making that dream come true.
If someone wants to be a nurse and has low vision, they should follow their dream. Don't give up your dream because people tell you you can't be a nurse. You won't know that until you have been through elementary school and high school and have majored in math and taken math and science. You don't know what you can do until your strength is called upon. And if it's your dream, go for it.
That's Karen McCullough, co-founder and co-director of the National Association of Nurses with Disabilities. It's a totally volunteer organization that's been guiding people with all kinds of disabilities, including low vision, through the process of becoming a nurse and helping them to figure out how to use their abilities to do their job for 20 years.
It could be an exception out there, but we do not know of any totally blind person who has successfully gone through a nursing program. We know of plenty who have become totally blind suddenly and unexpectedly, almost immediately after graduation. But we don't have a totally blind nurse. We do have lots of nurses and students who apply to school who have low vision, who successfully matriculate through the program, pass their RN license, and get a job.
Karen does say, choose a specialty that you can work in efficiently.
I think part of it has to do with what specialty they decide they want to work in. And I think one of them is always going to be, how fast a pace do you want to work in nursing? If you want to work emergency room or you want to work in ICU, that may or may not be the right choice for someone who has low vision. But for someone who is interested in, say, outpatient work and working in the clinical arena in a medical surgical wing, there are options, but I think it's an individual choice where decisions have to be made ahead of time on what is an area that they really liked while they were in school, because it makes a difference if you have a job that you like and not take the first one that comes to you.
One of the big issues facing a potential nurse is, do you disclose that you have low vision when applying to nursing school or for a job?
Because disclosure of a disability, no matter what it is protected under ADA. We have nurses who are very hesitant to disclose their disability for fear they might not get hired. So I think that I usually say, if you are a student or you are a nurse and looking for a job and you don't disclose, just don't set yourself up to fail. When you're asking me that question, my mind is going very fast because a lot of it has to do with disclosure. And believe it or not, there is without question people working in healthcare facilities, long-term care, that have low vision that have never closed. But they don't have the responsibility potentially that would endanger patient safety. And the first thing is always going to be ensure patient safety.
There are all kinds of ways that nurses can adapt techniques when their vision is a problem, like ZoomText and JAWS computer software, and magnifier and tools like ORCAM. An ORCAM is a tool that clips on the side of your glasses and comes with a pair of black glasses in case you don't wear them. It has a camera on it. You aim it at something, just like you would when you would look at something, like a page in a textbook or a patient's medical chart, and it reads it to you.
It's an amazing thing. It can be programmed to identify colors. It can be programmed to identify faces. If you point to something, it knows it and it reads it to you. It's not an inexpensive device, but if this is for the rest of your life, then I think that this is worth the investment to assist in reading. It's great for people who are totally blind. It's great for people who have low vision. I see the progress in the development or even the revolution of the development of technology impacting what nurses and even doctors can do in practice because it brings them up to a level playing field with everyone else.
ORCAM start at $3,300, but your State Department of Rehabilitation may buy one for you if it helps you do your job. Even better, they may pay for nursing school. Karen says don't talk to potential nursing schools and employers about what you can't do.
my area specialty for the last 33 years has been in workforce development. We don't have to sell our disability. We have to sell our skills. And that's different, a different way of looking at it. And a lot of HR people have said to me, I'm so tired of people telling me all about their disability. I only want to know if they know how to do Excel documents or that kind of thing. And I've certainly interviewed people with disabilities who spent most of the time during the first interview talking about their disability, which is not what they should do. They should be coming in and saying, here's my resume. I have this background in whatever it is. I am competent in every kind of medical record, technology, talking about the skills they bring to the job. In fact, when I have interviewed in the past, because assistive technology is still not well understood, I will bring what used to be the box that speech, JAWS or Zoom text, and I'll show that to the employer and I'll say, I have this and I can download this on the computer that you provide for me. It's at no cost to you because I have a license to use it. It's a selling point because I've had employers say, well, there's a lot of computer work. How are you going to do it? And that gives me a chance to open up, say how I'm going to accomplish the job. Instead of talking about my disability, I'm talking about what I can do for them.
You're listening to the Tactile Traveler, empowering blind and low vision people to explore the world and helping our sighted friends see the world in a new way. I'm Nick Eisenberg. Parul Arora is a nursing practitioner in a Chicago hospital.
I have Stargardt's. I have low visual acuity, and I started having low vision in fourth grade. So I actually was born with what most people would call normal vision or normal visual acuity, and it started to decline when I was quite young and in elementary school.
Parul works in palliative care.
Palliative care aids patients with life-limiting illnesses with symptom management and helps with complex decision making. I mainly am seeing patients in the clinic setting and doing physical assessments and making a treatment plan.
Parul says palliative care is a great specialty for a nurse with low vision.
It is. And the reason for that is, I've always been interested in end-of-life care and geriatrics, and so it's a very good fit for not only my vision loss, but my personality and my interest.
Parul doesn't do almost any of the things bedside nurses do. All she needs to do her job is use the computer, built-in enlargement software, and bend over and get close to the screen. Her department did buy her a laptop with the largest screen made.
Interestingly enough, patients will say to me, well, why are you looking so close at your computer? And, oh, you need glasses. I cannot count how many times I hear that from my patients. I say, no, actually, I have low vision. And so this is why I'm looking at the computer so closely.
Parul says her patients see her as a real human being and identify with her. Parul says working with the National Association of Nurses with Disabilities made becoming and being a nurse much easier.
They were great advocates, and it was transformative for me to become a part of this community and group because I was able to identify with these healthcare providers who had gone through their own journey, and I really learned what my rights were after I joined that organization. If you have a child with low vision or you yourself have vision loss, the world is your oyster. I have been told since I was young that I would not be able to work in healthcare. If you are thinking about entering healthcare, you can do it. Find mentorship. I encourage you to think broad. The world of nursing drastically changed in the last two decades. Bedside nursing is still a common pathway, but there are so many other pathways. There are nurses working in research. There are nurses working in wellness. There's nurses working in pharmaceutical companies. It is possible, and it is rewarding.
You can contact the National Association of Nurses with Disabilities at nond2003@gmail.com. That's nond2003@gmail.com. Andrew Whitlife helped with this story.
You're listening to The Tactile Traveler, empowering blind and low-vision people to explore the world and helping our sighted friends see the world in a new way.
I'm Nick Eisenberg. Why, it's my talking scale, reminding us that we'd like you to weigh in on how we're doing. Please send us an email to thetactiletraveler@gmail.com. We spell traveler the American way, with one L. We'd also like to hear your story ideas from all over the world. Please send them to thetactiletraveler@gmail.com. Transcripts of this program are available for our deaf listeners by searching The Tactile Traveler in any search engine. This program is also being broadcast on AfterSight, formerly the Audio Information Network of Colorado, and on audio information networks in additional states. And it's also available by typing The Tactile Traveler into any search engine, and available wherever you get podcasts, and by asking your smart speaker to play the podcast, The Tactile Traveler. We'd like to thank the following people and organizations that help make today's program possible. Be My Eyes Microsoft Accessibility Tech Support, Apple Accessibility Tech Support, Leslie Steffens, Pat Conneroe, Lorraine Hutchinson, Debbie O'Leary, Sarah Williams, Sophia Williams, Haley Romero, and Wally Burley. This has been The Tactile Traveler, empowering blind and low-vision people to explore the world and helping our sighted friends see the world in a new way. This has been a production of KDNK Community Access Radio, Carbondale, Colorado.